Good afternoon and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. We're here every Tuesday at lunchtime, 12 o'clock, on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. Real Talk is the show that seeks answers to questions big and small. Today's question is probably one of the biggest any of us humans will have to address ever in our lifetimes. Can we create a carbon-free environment here on Vashon? Possibly in the world. I'm here with island activists and a couple of gentlemen who are board members of the island's Climate Action Group. They are Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you for having us.
And Andy James. Welcome, Andy.
Yes, happy noon.
Yeah, happy. I hope you guys ate before you got here.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Good. So
we're satisfied.
That's what counts.
Yes.
So tell us about the Climate Action Group here on Vashon, and what is it you're after?
Well, we're a year old this month.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And we have a couple of goals. I mean, the large goal, of course, is the same large goal that all climate groups are working on, which is a sustainable future. Our secondary goal is the one that we can focus on, which is to have an infrastructure of activism. And that everyone who's involved has something they can do. You know, it's such a massive, massive issue, and it's such the wrong scale for an afternoon of work. You know, if you have an afternoon off, what can you do for an hour? So that's where we want to build a bridge so that people could say, well, at least I can do this, and we can put some projects together and have an influence through direct action.
What do you mean? We're here to talk about carbon freedom.
Yeah.
What is a carbon-free environment, and how do you and the Climate Action Group propose that we get there?
Well, I'm going to throw this to Kevin, and because the Climate Action Group has a lot of things going on at any given time, and we want to be actually a kind of a garden in which lots of different projects can grow, and one that did grow is the one that Kevin is working on. And our specific, well, he'll explain.
Okay, so the focus of our carbon-free campaign is to take a pretty major step to get away from fossil fuels towards renewable energy and conservation. And of course, we all were familiar with our carbon footprint discussions, right, that came up, and how to be more conserving of electricity so that we're more conserving of the planet's resources. And what we're finding is that whole movement has now resulted in very effective solutions that don't involve digging fuel out of the ground and burning it in order to generate power and heat for our use. And so that's specifically things like wind and solar energy, which are now actually more affordable than coal and natural gas, according to the latest studies.
Capturing that energy is more affordable. How about distributing it? Is there an infrastructure that exists to distribute solar and wind power now?
It's the same infrastructure that we have today. Now, there are some attributes of that infrastructure in which, you know, what we have today is the majority is big generators that all rotate at the same frequency, our 60 hertz power. So other sources like solar don't have that component. So they have to be synchronized in order to come onto the grid. But there are people looking at that. There are some people concerned about that. One of the people who will be helping us with testimony coming up in this decision is working in that area and says that they're finding that they're able to make these renewable distributed energy systems very compatible with the grid we have today.
Now, that's exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Now, we can always improve the grid. There's ways to make it better, but it's not... We shouldn't go into this thinking we don't have a way to get the power distributed, because we absolutely do.
We can do it. We're Cascadia.
There you go.
Cascadia, which might secede from the union in the next couple of years, but that's another story.
Mm.
Yes.
So what steps is the Climate Action Group taking now to work us toward a carbon-free environment here on Vashon?
Of many things that we are looking at, but the big focus for this conversation is with our current Puget Sound Energy electricity provider. They have made a very substantial move to close down two of their four coal plants. And most people don't know that 25% of Puget Sound Energy's power comes from burning coal.
True. Most people think it's hydroelectric power.
Yeah, and it's only about a third of our power, despite all of the Bonneville Power Association infrastructure, only about a third of our power actually comes from hydro here in Puget Sound Energy's district.
And you said 25% comes from coal, so where does the rest come from?
Well, there's about 35% comes from burning natural gas.
Ah. Yeah, so it's majority fossil fuel power.
Yeah, about 60%, about two-thirds. So the great news is that Puget Sound Energy is going to move forward and close two of their four coal plants. What we are doing is making people aware of that move, that forward step, which is very important. Mm-hmm. We're also letting people know that we think Puget Sound Energy can close all four of their coal plants in the next 5 to 6 years. And this summer, we attended hearings where the settlement that's come out of that actually lets Puget Sound Energy reschedule their finances so they're actually able to close all four coal plants in the 2025 timeframe.
So is that saying that they're getting regulatory support for this kind of thing?
They certainly have regulatory infrastructure in place to do all of these things.
All of these things being moving from fossil fuel energy to renewable energy.
Correct.
Yeah, over the next 5 to 6 years?
Well, we hope so. It's all very complicated. How about if I make that the theme of today, that it's all very complicated?
It's all very complicated. Can you tear that apart and make it a little less complicated, Andy Chance?
Sure. So a utility like Puget Sound Energy is a monopoly for the people it provides energy to. And as a result, there has to be a regulatory agency in the government that acts on our behalf as ratepayers and gets a fair deal. That means that Puget Sound Energy cannot raise their rates for no reason or because they want more profit. So they have to go to what's called the Utilities and Transportation Commission and say, this is why we get to raise our rates. And in Washington State, because of historical reasons, for a lot of years, we didn't have a good infrastructure. We didn't have power plants. The West was underdeveloped that way. So the regulation was built that you can raise money by building. That's what you're allowed to raise rates for. You're not allowed to raise rates because you want more money or because you're losing money, but you're allowed to raise rates by indirectly making profit on building more infrastructure or repairing the infrastructure that you have. So, and for many, many years, the Utilities and Transportation Commission, their interest on behalf of ratepayers is really fairly narrow. Just make sure that rates stay low, make sure that things are safe, and that's the interest that we represent. And that's that. Then they can go back to the ratepayers and say, see, we did you proud. We kept your rates down and we made sure that things were safe. We're asking for them to include in their consideration for ratepayers that we don't want to pay for something as destructive as fossil fuel, burning fossil fuels. We don't want to pay for that anymore. It's not in our interest. If you look in the region, we are surrounded by people who get to pay for clean power, and we don't.
Okay, we are?
Mm-hmm. Bonneville Power Administration is almost 99% hydroelectric. Seattle City Light, Tacoma City Light, they get primarily from hydroelectric. So Puget Sound Energy, they say they want to make that transition too. So we are working with them. We're working with the UTC, but it's all complex because the UTC does not have a history of saying, now we also want to consider this issue, but we think they have to. We think there's no other way.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, Puget Sound Energy specifically, but utilities in general, can only raise their rates by building new infrastructure or repairing the infrastructure that exists. And if they're going to go to renewable energy, they have to do both of those things, and that would raise our rates. Is that a correct statement?
It is somewhat. And I'm gonna throw that over to Kevin, because there may be people who are opponents of renewable energy who will say, well, it's going to be expensive, but actually it's already cheaper. So anyway, Kevin, you explain that.
So there's We know that these coal plants in Montana will ultimately close. The two that they're closing are, I don't know how old they are, but we keep hearing about coal plants. They're not economically viable. Natural gas has now much cheaper than coal. Renewable energy is now cheaper than both coal and natural gas.
That's interesting.
So, yes.
That's a little known fact, I would think.
It's a new fact, actually.
Yeah, coal is failing on its own.
Yeah, despite all of the coal is coming back, if you look at the data, it's not. There are some new coal facilities that open, but on par, those coal plants are closing. We are reading about energy plants that burn coal that are not economically viable. They're losing money every day, which means the ratepayers are paying more money for their power than they need to. So what we are looking at is a crossroads where we can decide, we'll help decide as a community working with the regulators and the utility, what direction we want to go. And we want to go for not only immediately at least a par or lower cost solution, but we also want to avoid a future of cost volatility that is historically attended to fossil fuel costs.
Let me ask you this. What are the chances that utilities would actually reduce rates to their consumers if renewable energy turned out to be cheaper than, say, coal or natural gas?
I say it is very possible. There are a lot of factors, and it's hard to predict the future. And if we could predict the future, of course, we'd all be multi-billionaires. But the trend lines are very encouraging. For example, right now, natural gas is selling lower than it has for, say, the last 7 years. If you look 7 years back, fracking is largely responsible for that. So that's a very effective, efficient way to extract methane from the earth. It's also a very damaging way to extract methane from the earth.
Are you supporting the idea of natural gas?
We are not liking natural gas for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, the problem is natural gas prices out in carbon terms as being cleaner than coal, which it is if not a drop leaks. But if you study, when you extract natural gas through fracking, lots of it leaks, and it comes out as methane, which is quite a bit more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2.
Very much so.
Like all those cows passing gas.
There's that too.
In the fields.
Yeah. It actually becomes dirtier than coal. It's somewhere around 3.5% of leakage. And the typical leakage is over 5%.
Where does nuclear energy fall into this discussion?
It's a very small percentage. And it is certainly a big topic. And we could spend an entire tech talk talking about that. So it's really a small player for this decision that we're looking at, I would say.
And the current... It's just not competitive financially.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the key thing that Andy just mentioned is if we look at the alternatives that we have, if we look at natural gas, which is historically low. In the recent history, it's historically low cost. But there's damage that's being done. People's groundwater is getting polluted, you know. If we look at the medical issues surrounding frack gas extraction, there are a number of health issues that are starting to occur. So if those... sites, if those states decide they really don't want to bear that burden and they find an economic injustice problem with extraction of natural gas, those prices will only go up because that resource will become less and less available. The thing about solar and wind is that the most abundant resources we have on Earth are free. The sun shines and the wind blows. Now, it doesn't all the time. So the other wonderful thing is that battery energy storage techniques like Tesla's battery factory, they are installing in Puerto Rico, for example, battery storage and renewable energy systems to get Puerto Rico's power infrastructure back online. They're installing systems like that in California. So we know this movement is there. We know that we can take that step. And we have to look at what we think our long-range costs are. Free wind and sun, but just maintaining the infrastructure or continuing to dig up carbon out of the ground, burn it, suffer the consequences of climate change, which are not inconsequential, as well as the local medical problems that occur in these areas where they remove the gas by fracking.
Yeah, the good news is, I mean, if you take a look at the big tech companies like Apple and Google, they're building data farms, which are gobble up tons and tons of energy. And they're doing that by building big buildings and solar farms next to them. And they're not doing it out of the kindness of their hearts. They're doing it because it's cheaper.
Right.
So,
And is that off the grid then? Are they basically providing their own electrical energy?
Providing their own power, which suggests to me that PSC needs to take a good look at this and think, you know, what happens if communities or big organizations decide, you know, I can get it cheaper doing it myself? That would be disastrous for PSC. So there are all sorts of reasons where, and I think PSC is aware of some of this, and in their integrated resource plan, which we'll talk about, they do discuss these issues, and we just want to provide a little more oomph on this and a little bit more commitment on this. There is a version where they just kind of sleepwalk with what they've done before, and the Utilities and Transportation Commission just sleepwalks and just does what the case law says to do, and Puget Sound Energy winds up with these incredibly expensive boondoggles that they built. 10 years from now, you don't want a natural gas plant. You want solar and wind.
All right. We're talking with Andy James and Kevin Jones, board members of the Vashon Island Climate Action Group, about the potential for a carbon-free world. We are able to do this here on Real Talk, if you're just joining us, thanks to Windermere Vashon Real Estate for their support in making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. And I'd like to get to the economic benefits of the move toward renewable energy, which will, I think the comment that you made, Andy, was switching to renewable energy is like moving 1.5 million cars off the road. Tell me if I got that right or not.
Yeah, I think that's what we've been saying. It's from a study. It's that equivalent in greenhouse gases.
In other words, moving completely to renewable energy.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that number is regarding the specific closure of the coal plants in Montana.
That alone.
And I believe that 1.5 is for closing the two coal plants, and we want them to close four coal plants. So the power of this one step, this one decision that we have in front of us, is we can save 1.5, maybe 2 million cars worth of carbon forever if we go forward with conservation and renewable energy.
With this one step, with this one power utility, Puget Sound Energy, you can do that much good toward a carbon-free environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the first two power plants are actually some of the most toxic power plants in the nation.
Wow.
So they are in particularly a very, very good thing that Puget Sound Energy is making this commitment.
Yeah, thank you, PSE.
To move in this direction. Mm-hmm. They haven't committed to closing all four of them, but they have committed to closing the first two.
So tell us about the economic benefits.
Well, there's, I'd like to go big picture, holistic, right? So we all know that power is pretty, oftentimes can be a substantial portion of our bill that we pay just to, you know, light our homes and heat our homes. And there's things that we can do, and there's things we can do today to reduce our demand. You know, conservation is an important part of this equation that we're talking about. Puget Sound Energy does home energy inspections. I've had my home inspected. They'll come out, they'll look for major items that can be improved, which will save you money, and it will save us the need to generate more power. The other thing is, we talked about Microsoft, and Puget Sound Energy is right there with Microsoft as they're going to a renewable energy. It's called the Green Direct Program.
Oh.
Yeah. So the other thing is that Puget Sound Energy has a green power plan. Now, this costs you more out of pocket, but they will basically buy wind energy credits on the market to add to their mix of electricity so that they don't have to burn as much natural gas and as much coal.
Is that something the individual can purchase? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. PSE customers can go to the website and sign up for the Green Power Program.
Our guess is that we are at an inflection point where, depending on the decision that PSE makes, it may be the opposite of what we're saying, where you may have to pay more for some fossil fuel energy if that's your kick. I doubt it will be, but you know, that renewable energy is going to be cheaper. It's bound to be soon. If you look at the cost curves, it has been every year people have said, surely the degree that we're done, you know, like solar is done getting cheaper because it can't keep going, and then it keeps going and it keeps going. Just the same way that you see, you know, like surely computers are going to slow down in how much faster they get and how much more capable they get. Like, aren't we done yet now that it's 1992? And no, we were not done then. We're not done in the future. And it's the same thing with renewable energy. And then there are also, I mean, I think it's also worth pointing out the cost of climate change itself, which right now the U.S. Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources estimates $300 billion a year now. And
to ameliorate the effects of...
Yeah.
Of climate change.
Yes,
in
yes.
the U.S.
Yes. But, and if you look at in the future by 2039, it's $1 trillion a year. Because then you are talking about coastal flooding. You're talking about infrastructures destroyed. You're talking about farmlands not producing anymore. And, you know, past that, then we're talking about existential threats.
We've already seen this year with the cost of repairs in Texas and Florida and mm-hmm. Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. You know, those are hundreds of millions of dollars of costs that people bear in rebuilding homes, rebuilding infrastructure, replacing food supplies that are destroyed. So those are the kind of costs we're talking about. And our challenge is right now is that our Environmental Protection Agency is looking at our cost of carbon. We call it the social cost of carbon. All of these impacts that hit our pocketbook,
yeah.
maybe not your pocketbook or my pocketbook, but somebody's pocketbook's getting mm-hmm. hit. The $1,400 a ton is what the Obama administration estimated for methane leaks. The current EPA wants to change that to $55 a ton. The reason they justify doing that is they say, we only need to take into account the damage that's done in our country due to emitting methane. Mm-hmm. But we all know we're all on the same planet. And communities who don't have the financial resilience that we do oftentimes really bear the brunt. So we're looking at not only our costs of hurricane recovery and damage repair, but we're also looking at other communities that are even in worse shape than we are. And that's a fundamental social justice rationale in my mind to make this move. In addition to Lazard, their 10th report, they do industry assessments of costs. Their 10th report, you can go on the internet, Lazard, and it basically says wind and solar are now cost competitive and cheaper. So that is logically the way we do want to go, not even to mention all these other costs.
So are these folks making that cost comparison between the cost of climate change and the cost of investing in renewable energy? Is somebody looking at that? Of course, I'm not sure this administration is interested in the social justice costs. So let's
I think
wipe
we,
that
I, you know, I, when I'm speaking to the members of the Vashon Climate Action Group, I say, don't just take your eyes off of that. The truth is that it has always been hard to find where is the exact place that we're going to make this decision. And the regulators say we need to, the legislature needs to do it. The legislature says we need support from the public. The public says we need to see something happen that we could support. And it just goes around in a circle yeah. and no one knows where to put their finger down onto the problem and say, this is when we're going to make our stand. This is when we're going to say, all right, now we improve our infrastructure. We do better. So I want to talk along those lines about what people can do if they want to get involved. First
Please.
Thing is, if you go onto Facebook and you search for the Vashon Climate Action Group, you can join. And then we will connect you to this campaign if this campaign is what you are interested in. We do other things too. There's an op-ed coming up in the next Beachcomber, written by one of our members, Angela London. Give that a read, and I'm sure we'll have, I mean, I know she has included ideas about what we can do there's some public comments that you can leave. If you go online to sc.org/carbonfreePSE, there's a letter you can sign, and we can also you can find the way to leave public comments.
Yeah, and Andy, we actually have an update to that information.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so there are to go online to a different link, you'll be able to submit a comment directly to the utilities commissioners on whether you would like this carbon-free future. And that link is sc.org/DearUTC. So DEARUTC. Now, the link that Andy provided is still very viable as well, but this will be a comment directly on this decision that the utilities commissioners will be making here in the near term.
Hmm.
In addition to the Vashon Climate Action Group Facebook page, where I think right now that information does exist. I don't think we've pinned it to the top of the page, but it's out there just this morning.
Yeah. We also have this Sunday at noon at the Land Trust building, the team is having a gathering. And it'll be the easiest thing in the world is to walk in and say, I want to be part of this. We need as
this
many
Sunday,
people as we
what
can.
Time at the Land Trust building?
Noon. Sunday, December 10 at noon at the Vashon Land Trust building.
Yes, stop by. We'll talk about the successes. There's a lot of really, really good things happening. We're beyond the point at which half the coal plants in the country have closed now. We have, looks like, successfully stopped a major oil export terminal on the West Coast,
yes,
in Washington.
Yes.
So come by and hear about what is going on in this area and what we can do locally here on Vashon Island to help make that continue.
How is the Vashon Climate Action Group connected beyond the island? Are you connected to other groups?
Well, we've been working a lot with the Sierra Club on this campaign, yeah. And we had members of groups from off-island attend our Earth Day in April, and we're building those relationships.
Are you going to do that again?
Yeah.
For Earth Day?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, on this decision the UTC will make, is there's six regional groups right now: Vashon Island, Bainbridge Island, Bellevue, Kirkland, Bellingham, Olympia, South King County. We're all networking and working together, and also reaching out to other groups like the Washington Environmental Council and groups like that.
I'm sure you have more to say. We're running out of time.
I do want to sneak one thing in.
Please do.
That someone was surely yelling at the radio that there have always been hurricanes. Yes, there have. But if you angry up the atmosphere, then guess what happens? You get more of them and they're worse.
That's right. So the other thing we're planning, so the big push that we're doing to get people aware of this is going to run from now until probably mid-February timeframe. And the hearing will be somewhere in the mid-February to early March.
Exactly what hearing and where, before what body?
And this is to the commissioners who will listen to what Puget Sound Energy's plans are.
Utilities and Transportation Commissioners.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it will be likely in Olympia. They don't have a date or a venue yet. We have had people, like 20-some people from Vashon, go to the two hearings. We've had people testify. It's very powerful just to be in the room to hear the issues that people care about to make this difference. So we'll let you know how to contribute a comment, how to go to our town hall, how to go to a hearing, and how to really raise your voice to make a difference.
I want to thank you both so very much. This is Susan McCabe, your host for Real Talk. We've been talking with Andy James and Kevin Jones, who are board members of the Vashon Climate Action Group, focused right now on a carbon-free environment. You can learn a whole lot more about that if you attend their presentation Sunday, December 10th, 12 noon at the Vashon Land Trust building. Thank you for being here, and thank you for all the work that you've been doing.
Well, thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk. This is Susan McCabe. Next week, Terry Hershey is going to join us to tell you how to relax, refresh, and renew amid all the holiday hubbub. So join us every Tuesday here at lunchtime, 12 noon. And if there are questions you'd like to get answers to, send us a note at realtalk@voiceofvashon.org. Thanks for listening.